Kelly Schwinghammer. I'm the communications director for the Blue Green Alliance, and I just wanted to take a second to introduce this call. This is a release of a report called Rebuilding Green, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and the Green Economy. We'll have a few short statements from each of our four speakers before turning it over to Q&A. And now I'd like to introduce David Foster, Executive Director of the Blue Green Alliance.
Good morning. This is David Foster, the Executive Director of the Blue Green Alliance. First, a quick word about who we are. The Blue Green Alliance is a national strategic partnership of 10 American unions and four environmental organizations with a combined 14.5 million members. We share a common vision on the importance of increasing the number and quality of jobs in the green economy. And thus, today, marking the second anniversary of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, is an appropriate time to evaluate the investments that piece of legislation made in the green economy and made in increasing the number and quality of jobs. In November, we went through an election in this country that was a referendum on how to create jobs. So also appropriately, as debate unfolds in the U.S. Congress and across state capitals in America, the fundamental debate about how we create a job creation strategy in this country, whether it be guided by deficit cutting or through smart strategic investments that put Americans back to work while positioning us for the competition of the 21st century economy, is extremely relevant. Our report, Rebuilding Green, assesses the outcomes of the green investments that were contained in the Recovery Act. We estimated the actual number of those green investments as $93 billion, the largest such investment made in U.S. history. They resulted in the creation or saving of just under 1 million jobs, 997,000, that run across the gamut of the American economy. These jobs especially were important since they resulted in the hiring of some of our economy's most vulnerable workers, including those who have been on the losing end of structural trends in our labor market, and especially those with less than a four-year college degree. These investments were also extremely effective in expanding the U.S. economy, contributing to an increase of $146 billion in U.S. gross domestic product. We have also identified in the latter part of the report a sampling of case studies of the Green Investments in the Recovery Act that demonstrate the breadth and effectiveness of those programs in putting Americans in all occupations, from design engineers to welders, back to work. So at a time when America needs to be implementing a hiring plan instead of a firing plan, we think Rebuilding Green points policymakers all across the country, whether at the federal or state level, in an important direction on how we put America back to work and regain those 11 million jobs that were lost in the current recession. So with that introduction, I'd now like to turn the program over to Carl Pope, the chair of the Sierra Club and co-chair of the Blue Green Alliance. Carl?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much, Dave. I'm delighted to be with you. I think the report also points to I want to focus on a single number that Dave mentioned. The payback period for the investments in the American Recovery and Reconstruction Act was about 8 months. The U.S. economy got back a dollar for every dollar invested in ERA in only 8 months. Now, that is a really astonishing return on investment, but it's not a complete measure of the return on investment. Dave mentioned the million jobs. But I'm going to point out to another important aspect that many of the ERA investments, particularly the investments in weatherization, contributed. Not only are we adding economic activity, we're reducing the expenses that people have to pay to keep their homes and their offices warm and lighted. And those expenses are going to be a key part going down the road in whether or not we have a second round of foreclosures and whether or not we have a round of crisis in the commercial sector. The problem with the American Reconstruction and Recovery Act, as was said at the time, it was too small, and fundamentally, the commitment that it made in areas like weatherization was too short. We're right now having a debate about a budget. One of the issues in the debate on that budget is what to do about low-income weatherization assistance. It would clearly be more cost-effective long-term in the U.S. economy to invest even more money in weatherization so that low-income people wouldn't need assistance paying their utility bills, because as a practical matter, their utility bills could easily be too small to worry about. So there's still an enormous investment opportunity. ERA primed the pump for a new generation of better buildings, of high-performance American homes and office buildings. But we're going to have a debate right now on Congress on whether or not we're going to turn that down payment into a permanent investment in American infrastructure that meets the needs of the 21st century.
Thank you very much, Carl. And now I'd like to call on Leo Girard, the international president of the United Steelworkers Union and the labor co-chair of the Blue-Green Alliance. Leo?
Thanks, David. I first want to attach myself to all the comments that Carl made, because I think he's hitting it right on. And the reality is that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act really kick-started the ability to do the kind of work that will reinvigorate and in some ways regrow industrial manufacturing in America in a way that will be creating good family-supporting jobs, will take carbon out of the air and reduce energy consumption, make a lot of our businesses more productive and profitable as we move towards long-term, sustainable, affordable energy circumstances. The thing that really is very important, that if we don't have a reinvigoration of manufacturing in this country, not everyone is going to leave high school or college or university with sort of master's degrees and college degrees, especially when you see the current price of going to college and the attack on working families and their ability to send their kids to college. So that we need to have the kind of jobs where people can earn a good living manufacturing things. And the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act started that process with a kickstart. Carl made the point about the $93 million investment and how quickly it was paid off, creating a million jobs. But it also increased gross domestic product by $146 billion. If you look at the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, actually created or saved 3.4 million jobs, and it boosted the gross domestic product by $520 billion. So the reality is that that's not only a good investment on the economic side of the equation, it's been a good investment for maintaining and creating new jobs, so that we want to totally support the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, but also make the case that some of what's going on right now in the Congress, where one party is talking about chopping everywhere that they could chop on everything that would create new jobs, protect jobs, whether it's high-speed rail, whether it's wind and solar, whether it's industrial retrofitting or commercial retrofitting, all of those things will create tens of thousands of jobs, good family-supporting jobs. They'll re-energize our manufacturing base. They'll help pay down the debt because they'll put people back to work. Factories will expand, and factories will pay taxes. Corporations should pay taxes. And that will be a triple bottom line, as they say. It'll be good for jobs. It'll be good for the economy. And it will be good for the climate. And it certainly will be good for the next generation of our children and grandchildren. So we think that it's been a good investment, and we think there ought to be more done. David, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much, Leo. And finally, I'd like to call on John Irons, the Director of Research and Policy for the Economic Policy Institute and one of the chief authors of the report. John?
Great. Thank you, David. Let me take a few minutes to highlight some of the main findings from the report that was released today. But I want to also remind everyone about the overall state of the economy when the Recovery Act was passed. In the months leading up to the enactment of the Recovery Act, the economy was losing hundreds of thousands of jobs a month. In fact, in January of 2009, just over 2 years ago, the economy lost 820,000 jobs in that month alone. And in February, it lost 726,000 jobs in that month alone. So the economy was very much in need of a lifeline. 2 years later, it seems appropriate to take stock and to assess the impact of the Recovery Act, again, keeping in mind that there was just an immense, huge hole to fill, and also that we're still not where we want to be. So let me turn to some of the specific results of the paper, and now some of these numbers have already been mentioned, but let me tie them together and give a little bit of flavor. First, the paper finds that there is substantial evidence that the Recovery Act in total created or saved millions of jobs. Our review of private and public sector forecasts show that the act resulted in the net creation of up to 3.4 million jobs through the middle of 2010, boosted GDP by up to $520 billion, and reduced unemployment by up to 1.8 percentage points. Now, these come from a variety of forecasters, ranging from Goldman Sachs to Global Insight to macroeconomic advisors to the Council of Economic Advisors and the CBO. So I think there is a broad consensus that the Recovery Act did have a major impact on economic growth and job creation. Second, through the end of 2010, the Recovery Act committed about $93 billion in public investments to green economic activities, boosting GDP by $146 billion. So the green component of the Recovery Act was essential, was a major aspect of the Recovery Act. If you look at the impacts of the green piece, the investments through 2010 created or saved almost a million jobs, including both direct and indirect jobs, as well as what we call respending or indirect jobs. And roughly the ratio is 2-1. There's two direct jobs created for every induced or respending jobs. Third, the green jobs provide significant employment to some of the country's most vulnerable workers. And I think Leo hit the nail on the head with this. What we found was once you match together the impact of the green job spending with the industries in which those dollars were spent, tie those to the occupations of people who work in those industries, we found that the Recovery Act and the green provisions in it provided a greater share of jobs to workers without a four-year degree than the economy as a whole. Despite that, the wage distribution was more heavily concentrated in the middle than the overall economy. So there's actually fewer low-paying jobs. So what we're talking about is we created, through these provisions, jobs that paid relatively well given a relatively less educated segment of the population. So these are in some ways exactly the kinds of jobs you wanted to have created through the Act. Finally, let me also mention that these provisions are not just about immediate job creation, but they're also about putting a down payment on creating a new green economy. The long-term investments will yield dividends for many years to come. So the Recovery Act really did combine very needed short-term job creation at a time when we also needed long-term investments. And as the example of heating assistance goes, you know, we hope that even further investment would yield further dividends down the road, yield lower costs to consumers, and at the same time boosting economic productivity and economic growth. So let me turn it back to you, Dave.
Okay, thank you very much, John, and we'll now throw it open to questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, press star 1 for questions. Okay. And your first question will come from the line of David Moberg.
Thanks very much. Two questions. One, I wondered how the green investments compared in economic bang for the buck to other components of the American Recovery Act. My impression is that it seems like there may have been more jobs and more GDP growth from the green economy investments and from other components. And the second part of the question was, how much federal investment in green economy jobs do you think could reasonably be absorbed in the course of a year if you were projecting your ideal budget for extending the work of the RRA?
John, do you want to kick this off?
Yeah, I'll certainly take the first bite at the bang for the buck question. When you look at where the money has gone on what is characterized as green, be it weatherization or construction in various different ways, these all have a very high bang for the buck. When you look at how the dollars are spent, they're spent immediately. They're not saved by consumers the way tax cuts can be. They're not saved by businesses as business tax cuts can be. They tend to go to, immediate job creation, and the dollars are then spent on supplies, which are often from local suppliers. And so you find that it has a very high bang for the buck, especially when compared to some of the tax cuts that are not well targeted, and especially when you compare it to some of the business tax cuts that were part of the Recovery Act. So I think that the green aspect are going to be amongst the highest bang for the buck of all the provisions that are included. In terms of the second question, I think it's abundantly clear that the economy can absorb much higher levels of investment through the green, the green investments. At the very least, we know that cutting these investments is not something that would seem wise, given both the long-term need for these investments as well as the short-term need for job creation. I think at some point you might very well hit a limit about how many dollars you can spend, through this channel. I think we're nowhere near that limit. I would love to, begin to see us get closer to that, but I have no question that there's much more capacity out there to expand these investments.
This is David Foster. Let me cite one example that I think is particularly instructive, and that was the so-called 48C Advanced Energy Manufacturing Tax Credit. That tax credit was worth $2.3 billion in the Recovery Act. It was oversubscribed by a real 3-to-1 for applications to get that tax credit. It ended up supporting 183 manufacturing facilities that generated roughly 17,000 jobs, and most importantly, it was matched by or leveraged $5.4 billion in private investment that created an additional 41,000 jobs. So you can see that here was a program in which American manufacturers were willing to spend their own money in order to ramp up manufacturing within the clean energy sector, and simply weren't able to get the tax credit because of its small size. Now, you compare that to what's going on in China today, where China is spending double what the U.S. economy, and our economy, of course, is far bigger, but they are spending double what we are on clean energy and renewable technologies, creating hundreds of thousands of jobs that we are far better positioned to ramp up and create here in the U.S.
Let me jump in on what Dave said. It's Leo Gerard. And one of the shortcomings of the Recovery Act was that there was a lot of money in a portion of it called 1603. And in that money, in that area, there was a lot of money to stand up renewable energy complexes, whether it was geothermal, solar, wind, etc. There was assistance to do that. But in particular, the Republican Senate, during the period of time, held back and wouldn't support the expansion of what we call 48C, the provision that Dave Foster alluded to. And that provision, when it became public, was oversubscribed in a matter of days of private sector companies who wanted to get some of that assistance, and they would have matched it with some of their own money and would have expanded even further. So we think that one of the things that we should be doing as a nation and should be bipartisan is expanding the part of 48C recovery monies that could be used to leverage with private sector money and help expand the domestic supply chain for renewable energy and for high-speed rail and things like that, because currently our supply chain has got all kinds of holes in it. And so there's just room for expansion in that area that would create tens of thousands of jobs. And as the report says, and Carl and Dave alluded to, is that it's an investment that pays itself back in a matter of months, and it expands GDP just as quickly, so that there's positive benefits to the nation, positive benefits to families, positive benefits to the planet in doing this stuff. And let me just make one last point that often we're talking about green jobs and that people don't know exactly what the heck we're talking about. We have two steel companies with or two plate mills that we represent the workers at. Prior to the Recovery Act, they were basically either running at next to lower than 50% capacity or running part-time. And with the renewable energy kickstart that we came from the Reinvestment Act, those two plate mills are now running full out, and there's talk about maybe expanding. Each of those plate mills has over 350 direct jobs making steel plate, not to yet figure out what's in that multiplier effect that if you're making that plate, you need the people that are going to move it on trucks, and you need all the infrastructure that's going to do that. So green jobs is more than seeing the blade turn around on a windmill. It has its own supply chain if we can get it back to work, and that's why it was so successful.
Great. Next question.
And your next question will come from the line of Joel Wendland.
Yeah, this is a question for President Girard. The business media, much of the media, the pundits are saying, well, in your opening remarks, you connected the creation of jobs to the paying down of the deficit and the federal debt. And the business media and the pundits and so on are chastising people who make those kinds of claims by saying, no, we have to, quote, live within our means. How would you respond to that?
Depends where I am. If I was in a shop, I'd respond in a different way. But and the language would not be the one you'd use in your paper. But on this, I just say it's baloney. The fact of the matter is, one of the problems we have in America is not necessarily a spending problem. It's a revenue problem. And let me connect those dots for you. During the Bush era, we lost 53,000 factories. Every one of those factories contributed to the economy, not just by what they made, but the factory paid taxes for its land, it paid taxes for everything it did, and it employed workers. And those workers paid taxes. And those workers had a multiplier effect, and those workers paid taxes. And we've now had not 15 million people unemployed. We've had closer to 27 million people either underemployed or unemployed, and that came about as a result of the economic collapse and bad policy manufacturing, lack of manufacturing policy, lack of industrial policy, and bad trade deals. So you link all of those things together, and on top of that, you take the 8 years of the Bush tax cuts that were into the trillions of dollars, two wars fought off the books, all of that usual stuff, and then last December, giving almost $1 trillion of tax cuts to the rich and ultra-rich. Don't come back to me then and say that an investment that creates jobs, that pays back the investment in 8 months, and almost doubles the investment in creation of gross domestic product in the same amount of time, is a bad investment. Those are the kind of investments we should be making, and that investment will help pay down the debt when people are working, and that we're making things and creating real wealth as opposed to paper wealth that was created on Wall Street. That's the reason the American Recovery and Investment Act was such a powerful tool, and that's why we need more of that, not less of it. And I'll come back and close by saying we get a multiple bottom line. We get a more competitive society, we get a cleaner environment, and we get jobs that our kids and grandkids can hope to have where they can raise their family.
And this is Dave Foster. I would simply add to Leo's comments on this topic that our report points out that tax cuts to the wealthiest section of the American economy is the least efficient way to put dollars in circulation back into the economy and get the economy stimulated and working. And in fact, that's the clear conclusion we've drawn, that a far more efficient way of getting the economy going again, both in the short term and in the long term, is through the kinds of investments in the green economy that we've highlighted in this report. It puts lower-income workers back on the job who spend all of their income, get dollars circulating in the economy, again, position our economy in an exponentially better way for competition for the 21st century jobs of the future, all while creating the basis for long-term deficit reduction. And there's no evidence that this kind of whacking away at employment in the public sector, combined with providing tax breaks to those who won't spend the money, will do anything except exacerbate the problem we're facing in America today. Next question.
And there are no questions at this time.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions, I would once again like to thank the authors of the report, John Irons of Economic Policy Institute, Jason Walsh of the Blue-Green Alliance, and thank our speakers today, Leo Girard of the United Steelworkers, Carl Pope of the Sierra Club, and John Irons of the Economic Policy Institute. You can find our report online, and our communications director, Kelly Schwinghammer, is available for additional media calls today. Thank you very much.